I must say, I'm not into comic strips. I used to love Little Abner when I was young, and then I liked Pogo. But these days, there's only two that are required reading for me. I begin the day with Doonesbury by Trudeau, not to be confused with either a notional French president or a Canadian prime minister. And come 1:30, when my daily email from Crikey comes thundering in, I wait for it to download a wonderful strip called First Dog on the Moon. It's quite extraordinary. But of course, Andrew Martin, and that's his real name, his real name isn't First Dog, is helped by a wide range of little creatures. Now, for example, if you don't get Crikey, well, I'm not going to advertise it, but if you were to get Crikey, you would see not only animals, there's Kevin Rudd. He's a disembodied face on a balloon. The PM is a fox with a mop of red hair. Malcolm Turnbull is, you'll remember this, older listener, the purple-haired Mrs. Slocum from Are You Being Served? Oh, but there, amongst the animals, there's the ABC interpretive dance bandicoot, whose wild contortions give an insight into all the big issues. Now, that probably sounds absolutely incomprehensible, but I promise you, comprehensibility is what you actually get in daily doses. Thanks to you, Andrew, and welcome to our little wireless program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Why do you hide, or why have you, until now, hidden under a pseudonym about a canine with a moon attachment?
Look, it's unfortunately not as mysterious as it might seem. When I started out drawing cartoons, the idea of pretending to be a large media corporation appealed considerably. So I originally called it Doggy Times, which sounded a bit like a newspaper and a bit like something you might name a business after. And then I found, and this was pre-internet, which will give you an idea of how long I've been doing it for. And unfortunately, if you put Doggy Times into a search engine, not all the results are family friendly, so I found I had to change that. But still liking the idea of working for a cartooning institute or a large media conglomerate, I applied the name First Dog on the Moon, which is an animation I did, I think in the late 80s on an Atari 6400. Anyway, it was pre-Mac. And there's really no good reason for it other than it was a dog in a spacesuit hopping across the surface of the moon, which entertained me enormously because I had it on a loop and I would sit there and watch it. And so I decided I'd call the whole thing First Dog on the Moon just to make it more complicated.
Andrew, you're not the only Australian cartoonist who is animal-reliant to some extent, you know. Looning, of course, famously has his duck and others. But you've got a very large menagerie. Do they all happen at once, or have you gradually added to your zoo of commentary?
No, look, I did a count just recently of the various creatures that have appeared probably more than once, or at least have a name, in the 3 years since I've been working at Crikey, and there's well over 100 of them, and I don't plan it. I don't sit down and think, right, I need to create another character to fit in with this particular view of the world that I'm creating today. They just sort of arrive, and you know, I'm fascinated by the natural world, by marsupials and insects and the landscape.
Well, so I was going to raise that point. As you may know, the totemic animal for this program is the wombat, for whom I have a genuine affection. I've always liked wombats. But clearly, there's a whole lot of animals out there and other critters for whom you are, to whom you're very devoted.
Well, yes, I like them all. I'm not sure. It's just over the years, I've grown up to become more and more fond of the beasts and the little fuzzy things, and I spend I mean, I was listening to you speaking with your previous guest talking about the amount of data on the internet and the number of stupid cat videos and animal videos that are available, which I spend way too much time laughing at various different, you know, animals getting themselves in and out of cardboard boxes and things like that. So it's just something that gives me a great deal of pleasure. I find it funny. And my job is actually trying to be funny. I try to do my job, which is to be funny. So why not stick an animal in there?
As you know, I very often send you little chirpy emails telling you that you've amused me on a given day. But there are times when my heart goes out to you when you obviously are quite genuinely sad or reflective, when the strip ignores politics very largely and becomes very self-referential. Obscure, always obscure. But, you know, you often switch off the political world and contemplate yourself.
Well, look, I try and, I mean, I write for myself. I draw these cartoons. Initially, I am my first audience, and if I am interested in something, which it probably sounds... I don't know, selfish or self-obsessed, but basically if I'm entertaining myself or if I'm expressing something that is important to me, I am coincidentally fortunate that other people enjoy it as well. So things come up for me or arrive as an idea, and a good idea is a good idea, so why not bung it in a cartoon, because that means I don't have to come up with another one. You know, there are days when I don't get any good ideas at all, and hopefully nobody notices.
I'm not sure whether you don't make it harder for yourself by the fact that you're running a strip. You're like Trudeau. It's a multiple frame story, whereas most of your ilk just go for the king hit. You know, one image, couple of words. Now, I know how incredibly hard that process can be, but surely your job is harder than theirs.
Oh, look, I'll let you in on a secret, which is that I'm, in some ways, I'm actually cheating. Some days I feel like I'm cheating. I'm sure people will happily tell me that they don't think that's what I'm doing. But with the individual frame cartoonist, and sometimes it's a gag, and sometimes it's just a simple idea, and I've done those kind of cartoons in the past, but I find myself racking my brain, and there's a real tyranny to the punchline that some days, what do you do if you don't come up with the joke? See, I mean, I've created a shtick or a universe or a world where if I don't come up with a joke, that's okay, because I can draw a dancing bandicoot interpreting what's happened in the politics of the day.
Well, that makes you a bit sort of Python-esque, doesn't it? Because they decided they weren't going to have a sort of a punchline. They got, you know, so they just avoided it and came up with all these devices, which often resolved with a now for something completely different. So you do a bit of that, don't you?
I like to do a bit of that. I mean, you mentioned Mr. Lunig, I think, at one point there, and I grew up reading Michael Lunig, so I think I like to think that I'm at best following in his footsteps, in that I got a real appreciation.
I think footprints, that's all.
Footprints.
Webbed footprints.
Paw prints, yes.
Paw prints.
I like to think that he did and is still doing something that a lot of other people don't do, which is to he uses his creatures and his drawings to talk about things that are a little more complicated or in a different way. And so I grew up reading those. And the other cartoon I read first thing in the morning is Doonesbury, just like you do. How about that? And he has a capacity to take the simplest idea and a single sentence and just make it the funniest thing. Some of the work that is available in cartooning today, I continually find astounding.
What's it like working in this relentless 24-hour news cycle? But the head of the program, I was talking about a political cartoonist who shall remain nameless, who didn't know anything about politics, so he used to ring me up at dawn and we'd nut something else out together. But that was in ancient times. It was 40 years ago when the 24 News our news cycle had not been invented. Now it must be a real bloody headache for you.
Well, there's, I mean, like your previous, the person you were speaking to previously, there's a great deal of data, there's a great deal of information, and I happily immerse myself in it. I'm a bit of a political junkie, and but it's look, I'll happily complain until the cows come home about how difficult my job is and how.
But you also acknowledge the impact of that cycle on the politicians themselves. You, I know you've made the point that the news cycle makes politicians boring. They're spending so much time attending to it, feeding that monster, that they spend, well, virtually their entire careers in election mode.
Well, they do, and I think allowing, I mean, I was at Carl Bitar recently, or Mark Abib, I can't tell them apart, talking about the problem with allowing the 24-hour media cycle to dictate policy, or maybe that was focus groups. It's all starting to meld together. But I should finish the point I was making before, which is that I like to complain about how difficult my job is, but, I mean, the reality is, I draw funny pictures for a living, I'm not really in a position to sit here and say, you know, I'll sit there for 2 hours on a Tuesday morning struggling to come up with an idea, and that's pretty much the worst thing that can happen to me in this job. Or I might get a mean comment on the bottom of one of my cartoons. So I think I've got it pretty good.
Do people, by and large, by crikey, do people get it? I mean, you are, I have to say, an acquired taste, a bit like, John Clark and his mate doing that weird thing on Thursday nights for the last 20 years. You know, it took a while to sort of get it. And yours is far more challenging, at least initially.
Yeah, oh, look, I do find that. I've fallen into a particular gap where people seem to, they come to it and they'll go, this is interesting. Oh, hang on a minute, I quite like that. Or they won't get it at all and they'll just move on. And then I become invisible. It's this, I've created this strange little universe where people, they either really like it or they don't like it, and then they don't even give it any further consideration. I mean, for me as a cartoonist, I could, but I won't list a number of cartoons that drive me bananas, and I'll see them in the newspaper, and they'll make me very frustrated. But I don't seem to, for some reason, the Teflon cartoonist, I don't seem to elicit that kind of response in people. I'm still waiting for the backlash. It hasn't turned up yet.
Well, I'd like to encourage that backlash, and Gladys and Bodies get stuck into the bastard.
Now, get it over and done with.
You are restless because, apart from the challenges of the daily grind, you've come up with a book. I would have loved to have launched it for you. You were kind enough to suggest that I could, but you did it in the wrong city. It's called First Stop on the Moon's The Christmas Story, The Story of the Christmas Story.
Yes.
And it is, it's a profoundly religious work. Let me just open it at random at page 21. There's a conversation going on here in relation to the Gospel of Luke, and a couple of dogs, one of them is a painter and the other isn't a painter, and the non-painter dog says to the painter dog, "Did you ever meet Jesus?" "No, but I heard he was very fond of chocolate biscuits. I call this one Jesus Gives Tim Tams to the Children." Now, I think that's a fair sample, and some of the listeners are smiling and others are looking completely bemused. What on earth are you doing telling the story of Jesus?
Well, it's. I mean, you see, you've taken it out of context, because on the other page, the first dog, who in fact is the Apostle Matthew, is offering Jesus a chocolate biscuit when they met for the first time.
Oh, right, I've just gone to the previous page.
Well, see, there you go.
So the first dog is Matthew.
that particular one is, yes, and the second one is Luke. What I've tried to do with this book is not just tell the Christmas story, because which is a story I absolutely love. I've always enjoyed it, and I have a particular fondness for Christmas time and the various rituals. However,
but there's lots of animals in the, you know, in the story of baby Jesus, isn't there? There's camels and there's
donkeys. It's funny you should mention that. It's kind of that's one of the points of this particular book, which is that I wanted to tell a Christmas story, and I was fascinated to discover that there aren't actually any animals in the Christmas story as it's told in the Bible, in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke.
I'm shocked. Well, cartoonists have added them?
Well, this was the beauty of the Christmas story over the years, is that what people have done is they've adapted it and they've taken various, and it's like the way we celebrate Christmas in general. It's not how it was done 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago. And one of the ideas behind the book for me is that Christmas is about whoever wants to celebrate it, and there's no right way to do it. And there's also no right way to tell the Christmas story per se, because the Bible even contradicts itself, and there is no donkey in the Christmas story. And I have to say, I was very disappointed. I was outraged. So I thought, well, look.
Well, I can't go on with the program. I mean, I'm so shattered by this revelation. What were the wise men on if they weren't on bloody camels?
Well, that's another good question. And how many were there? It doesn't actually say at any point that there were three of them.
You've actually read the Bible. Not even the most ardent Christians do that.
No.
Well, like when I was in the Communist Party, no one had read Das Kapital.
I had a copy of, not Das Kapital, I had a copy of the Bible next to me while I worked. I genuinely used it for the research. The Bible and, of course, that scholarly reference, Wikipedia, and, you know, just the internet in general. So, and look, and the bits, the holes that I wasn't able to fill in the story, I just made up myself. So it is a complete story, and I filled it with puddings and mince pies and giant squid because that's the kind of Christmas story I wanted to be able to tell. And I have to say, I'm looking at it now, it's hilarious.
I have to say this on your behalf. There may be some profoundly Christian listeners who are taking offence and think I'm just talking to some blasphemer. In fact, all of Andrew's work has a fondness for humanity, and he even finds it within his heart to feel a certain sympathy for politicians. And this is a terrific book. You could sit there and hand it out to your kids. You could give a copy to the local minister. No one would be really offended by it, would they?
Well, it was certainly not my intention to. I'm not having a go. I'm really not. I have, like I said, a great fondness for celebrating Christmas and all of the frippery that goes on with it, the presents and the trees and all that sort of stuff, but also the more central messages, which for me, as not as a Christian, for me, that's about family, it's about gratitude, it's about welcoming and accepting anyone and everyone. So, which I think they might be Christian messages. I wouldn't want to comment on whether that was the case or not, but the book is certainly for as broad an audience as possible. It's really not having a crack.
And, of course, you'll move on to books on Islam and Hinduism later at various degrees of peril. Now, while I have you, I want you to explain. Let's move away from the Christmas story. Let's move back to politics. I can actually work out why you might depict Kevin Rudd as a balloon. There's something about Kevin's rather pumped up face that does suggest a balloon, and the pressures within it. But how on earth did you get Mrs. Slocum to become a stand-in for Malcolm Turnbull? Mrs. Slocum?
Well, that's an interesting question. He actually, I had real trouble in the beginning drawing Malcolm Turnbull. He started out as a koala. He's got a sort of a koala-y thing about him. If you look at him from the right angle, it was just that one day I simply because in my work it's not just drawing. I use a fair bit of Photoshop, massaging various different images. It's all done on the computer, of course. And I'm not sure, I can't even remember. Oh, that's right. No, I remember I was doing Are You Being Served with Christopher Pine as John Inman, I'm Free, and, of course, Malcolm Turnbull was Mrs. Slocum. And when I put that purple wig on him, it looked like it had always been there. And it just worked so well that it stuck.
I don't think it makes any sense at all, but it works. You know, I won't deny that.
I find that a lot of what I do, I'll stick, you know, thing A on top of thing B, and if it's funny, then it'll make it into the cartoon.
And of course, funny is such a mysterious notion, isn't it? You know, how we respond to things.
Yes, it's. I couldn't tell you why it works. And in fact, if I tried to tell you why it works, why some particular joke or idea works, then it'll stop being funny. But I know it when I see it.
Mm. And so do we, Andrew. Do you actually go into the office? I don't know, is there a Crikey office, or is it all just done out there in the electronic ether?
No, there is. There's a Crikey bunker, and it is in Melbourne, and I go in there most days, and I'm surrounded by the hard-working and loyal Crikey crew who are all marvellous. And what they do for me, other than enabling me to immerse myself in the news stories of the day and have the conversations, is they spend a fair bit of time telling me that I'm not as good as I might think I am, and that I need to stay well and truly grounded. So I find that quite useful, because otherwise I would float off.
A bit like the Kevin Rudd balloon, perhaps.
Exactly, yes. Like the Kevin Rudd.
It's interesting. I, of course, work in dying media. Well, that doesn't apply to the program here. We do quite well, thank you very much. But newspapers, which have been the grist to my mill for half a century or more, a sort of withering, puckering, like balloons, going back to balloons, whereas the world wherein you dwell is growing apace, so you probably made a good career choice.
Well, career choice, yes. It was a bit like winning the lottery, really. I just happened to get noticed at the right time by the right people at Crikey and ended up with a full-time job, which is considerably fortunate. There are not a lot of full-time cartooning jobs in Australia, and I was able to actually make one.
So, well, look, I'm glad you did, and thanks for making me laugh, Andrew, as you so frequently do.
Well, thank you very much.
First Dog on the Moon's The Story of the Christmas Story by Andrew Marlton. On our next, it's another 2010 election diary by my old friend Bob Ellis, although is he my old friend? The new book called Suddenly Last Winter has a major go at me. I must cross-examine Ellis about this. Fancy turning against an old mate this late in our respective careers. For more information on that interview and about the program, do visit our website, www.abc.net/RN/LateNightLive. Stick around now for the news on ABC Radio National. See you later. I'm very hurt, Bob.